Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society, we're comparing the classics. Which is better, Donkey Kong Country or Moby Dick? It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I'm joined, as I am always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell.
Banana.
Oh, there we go. Yes. Yeah. And that sound, of course, means that we're in Mario versus Donkey Kong month.
We are, in fact, in Mario versus Donkey Kong month, which means we're mostly talking about Mario, hold on, and Donkey Kong all month long.
Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about different, like, Mario versus... We're going to be talking about Mario and Donkey Kong games in different generations.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to be, like, the as close as we can comparing apples to apples. One Mario apple versus one Donkey Kong apple. And then, I don't know what the goal here is, but we're just going to be determining, like, you know, like, how these things shape Nintendo and how Nintendo shapes these things.
Yep.
But before we get into that, Mark, we got a Patreon, patreon.com/Nintendo Cartridge Society, which you can go to. And if you are supporting us at the 8-bit or 16-bit levels, you can get access to our once a month episodes of miniseries where we do explore all kinds of things. We are currently doing NCS Arcade.
That's right, where Patrick and I are playing games from Nintendo Switch Online or Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack that we've never beaten before. In January, we talked about The Legend of Zelda The Minish Cap that was released for the Game Boy Advance, and that episode is out now. And later this month, we're going to be talking about another, well, I say another, because we're going to be talking about a Rare developed game in this episode.
Sure.
But
we're going to talk about two.
We're going to be talking about Jet Force Gemini.
Yeah. So if that interests you, go on over to the Patreon and check that out. If you would like to continue this conversation beyond the, 45 minutes of podcast that we provide you, you can head on over to the Discord. You head to the Discord. It's a big chat room for people who listen to this this show. What am I saying? You can email us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com to get an invitation, and then you're in there and having a great time. Last thing before we get into the actual topic at hand, my first issue of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles source book is coming out on February 21st, which, oh my God, I can't believe is like 3 weeks away right
so
now.
Soon.
2 weeks away right now. It's so soon. I put a lot of work into it. So if you are interested in Ninja Turtles and specifically the IDW Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comics, it is a good read. So head to your comic book store and pre-order it if you are interested. All right, Mark, let's get into it. Let's start comparing these Mario and Donkey Kong generations. Now, there's obviously not like a one-to-one, like Donkey Kong sometimes like more or less takes a generation off, right?
Yep.
Like there is, outside of like Jungle Beat, there's not really like a GameCube Donkey Kong game, for example, right? And like GBA, like, yeah, the Mario versus Donkey Kong games, but like Donkey Kong itself as a series goes through so many different like changes and like developers and dry spells that it's kind of just like it happens when they want it to happen, and Mario just happens all the time.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, Mario doesn't seem stay stagnant. It's always changing as well. Like every generation basically brings a new twist on Mario. But there's something that, like we talked about in last week's episode, that it feels so different with Mario and Donkey Kong. Like, when Mario changes, it is fundamentally the same. It, like, a Mario platformer is fundamentally the same, and its changes feel, like, deliberate and purposeful. And Donkey Kong, a lot of times, just feels like we're just seeing what sticks. You know, like Donkey Kong doesn't have a thing really. It just feels more haphazard.
Yeah, I would agree with that generally speaking. You know, we're going to talk three different like eras here, right? And the first era is, and should we lay them all out?
Yeah,
first?
Sure.
Okay. So the first era is world versus country, right? Super Mario World and Donkey Kong Country. Two games, both on the Super NES. The next era is 64 versus 64, Super Mario 64 versus Donkey Kong 64. And then the final era is just the most recent games in both of these franchises. So Tropical Freeze versus Wonder, which like that's the one where like things start to feel like the first two, I feel like have a very similar relationship. And then the last the most recent entries, I'm like, everything's out the window. It almost feels like they've flipped places in some ways. But let's wind all the way back to Super Mario World and Donkey Kong Country, games that we've talked about I think a fair amount on this show. Mark, what are your like overall experiences with should we just start with Super Mario World and then or should we talk about both of them together?
Yeah, what I guess, like, for me, what I think is kind of interesting about Super Mario World versus Donkey Kong in this sense is, with Super Mario World and Super Mario 64, because I think you're right that Wonder and Tropical Freeze are kind of outliers here. But with, like, both World and 64, you have this Super Mario game that is launching with the system that,
right,
it, like, sets the tone for what that system, it's like a statement of purpose,
right,
for that system.
I think that is a little more true of 64 though, because in Super Mario World, yeah, is like ends up being like a great demonstration of what the Super NES would be, but in a lot of ways the Super NES is just more powerful NES, you know. But it is also a launch game for the system, right? Like it is it's such a clear statement of purpose, and it comes right out the gate.
Yeah, I guess what I mean when I say for World that it's a statement of purpose, kind of like the system's thesis, is I do think it sets the tone for platformers on the Super Nintendo, and I think that Donkey Kong, in the sense that Super Mario World is, especially compared to Super Mario Brothers 3, is much more like take your time, explore the world.
Yeah,
you know,
sure,
in a way that it's slower paced than,
and the levels are a little bit longer too.
Yeah, than the really bite-sized, you know, like platforming of Super Mario Brothers 3. And I think in like Donkey Kong Country continues that. They're like, but I don't know that it's, there are a lot of secrets in Donkey Kong Country.
Yes, more. I would say there are more of them, or just more hidden things, right? That like exploration is such a big part of the Super Mario World, and the way that it rewards you for that exploration though is way different than how Donkey Kong Country does it, right? Like there aren't like secret exits that will lead you like down a different path on the world map in Donkey Kong Country, but like there are in Super Mario World. There weren't in Super Mario Brothers 3. Like I think in a lot of ways Donkey Kong Country is more like a souped up Super Mario Brothers 3 with Donkey Kong characters, like in that way almost feeling like a step back, but it also, like, Donkey Kong Country adds, or not adds, it's the first game in its series, but like it's so built around these bite-sized mini games that you encounter, like by finding secret barrels or, you know, going into like little areas, and like Mario World doesn't do that at all, right? Like Super Mario World is just, it's just its levels and its overworld map.
Yeah, and you get those bonus stages, you know, when you get 100 stars after, you know, from jumping through the
when you're just like hitting the, yeah, but that's
through like the goalposts.
What's weird is like there's no, like, yeah, you get extra lives, I guess, from that. But when I play them now, I don't care.
Right.
Right? Like, I just jump and I just hit the things. I just want it to be over faster. And if I get all the extra lives, I'm happy. If I get none, I'm like, okay, fine. I move on. But if I'm playing through Donkey Kong Country and I get into one of those little, like, bonus game sections, I have to do it right. And if I don't, then I'm going back into the level and trying it again.
I also think that in Donkey Kong Country, like, the levels don't feel very satisfying for the most part if you're not looking for the secrets. Like, if because there, a lot of them are just really straightforward, right? And not particularly long if you're just jetting through them.
Right. But can also be punishingly challenging, right? Like, that's one of the things that I think one of the big differentiators between Super Mario World and Donkey Kong Country is that Donkey Kong Country is hard and has, like, these difficulty spikes that are just, like, so high and so hard and so fast, and they kind of back off. I feel like Super Mario World as an experience is more meant to just be, like, gradually enjoyed.
It's also interesting to me that, you know, they're only released not that many years apart, especially in video game time today, right? Like, Super Mario World in the U.S. was released in 1991. Donkey Kong Country is just 3 years later. But the position that Nintendo is in between 1991 and 1994 is totally different.
Yeah.
Because the Sega Genesis is ascendant. You have the Saturn and the original PlayStation going to release the next year in 1995. And Donkey Kong Country was inescapable in 1994.
Yes.
Like, Nintendo went all out because they knew that the Nintendo 64 was still a couple of years away, and they didn't want to... And
the Virtual Boy was one whole year away.
And the Virtual Boy was one whole year away. But Super Mario World, you know, as beloved as it is, looked archaic compared to what was coming. And, you know, like, even the Genesis was kind of eating Nintendo's lunch. Sonic the Hedgehog was enormously popular and successful at this time.
Yeah.
And so Donkey Kong Country, with its, you know, like, pre-rendered sprite graphic things, looked like nothing else. And it made the Nintendo 64 feel so modern.
Right. Well, it made Nintendo feel modern, right? Because this game obviously was on the Super NES, and the Nintendo 64 was a couple years away, but still, like...
Oh, sorry, the Super Nintendo is what I meant. The Super,
in a way that, like, Star Fox, which was doing something technically more impressive, or more technically impressive, I guess is what I mean to say, made it look old and, like, creaky, right? Everything about Donkey Kong Country was about, like, reinterpreting what a platformer is, reinterpreting what Donkey Kong is, reinterpreting what 16-bit graphics could be, right? Like, it is a big swing, and, like, this is it comes to us from Rare, right? A company that is owned by Nintendo, was owned by Nintendo at the time, but, like, not being made in Japan, right? Which is something that we're going to see, like, consistently through these three different points of comparison, that this is a European-made game and not a Japanese game.
Yeah, and, you know, with there have been rumors for many years now that Nintendo in Japan is working on a new Donkey Kong platformer of some kind. And part of the narrative, the rumored narrative around it, is that they wanted to have some ownership over the character again, which kind of makes sense. You know, like, you're Shigeru Miyamoto. You're wearing your Pikmin shirt. You know, you are also the father of Donkey Kong.
Yep.
And that franchise has been, like, not associated with anything that you've worked on for many, many... I mean, he advised on all of this. But, you know, like, it's not... as he gets older, I wonder if he is like, we need to bring Donkey Kong back.
Let's bring Donkey Kong back into the fold. We'll have dinner together.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it does feel like, and I wonder just, like, why it happens, because it's not, if you look at Rare, who made a lot of games for Nintendo, like, they made a lot of first party games, but they're almost always, like, playing in their own sandbox, right? I guess with the only other exception is, the Star Fox Adventures, right? But Conker is their own thing. Banjo-Kazooie is their own thing. Perfect Dark is its own thing. Obviously, James Bond is not their own thing, but it's not a Nintendo property, right? And Jet Force Gemini. Like, there are all these examples of Rare making games for Nintendo that you wouldn't think of as, like, Nintendo games. You don't expect to see a Jet Force Gemini character appear in Smash.
Anything.
Well, yes. And like the fact that Banjo and Kazooie are in Smash Ultimate, like that is one of those like, wow, how did they do this kind of things, right? So yeah, it's just why did they let Rare play with Donkey Kong in the first place?
I don't know. And not only that, but like so much of what Rare created has just become a part of who Donkey Kong is, what Donkey Kong is, like Diddy Kong, Dixie Kong, Cranky Kong, Minecart, Funky Kong,
yes,
Minecart levels.
Yeah.
Like now it's impossible to imagine a Donkey Kong game without like minecart levels.
I mean, consider this. Rolling.
Right?
You've never seen Donkey Kong roll before Donkey Kong Country. Who the character is, how he moves, what motivates him. In the Donkey Kong Country games, he's getting bananas. We've never even seen this character eat bananas before. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Or like the fact that he wears a tie.
Yeah. Also, Donkey Kong, prior to Donkey Kong Country, never a playable character.
Crazy. Wait.
Think about that.
Wow.
Not in a sports game? Not in Mario Kart, because that's Donkey Kong Jr. You could not control Donkey Kong until Donkey Kong Country.
That is pretty wild.
So, who knows why it happened?
Right.
Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say the other, like, another thing that I think is interesting, a point of comparison between Super Mario World and Donkey Kong Country, is that Donkey Kong Country has, like, co-op. Kind of. You're not playing simultaneously.
This is a great point.
You know, but like there is a Donkey Kong and a Diddy Kong, and the two people can be like you can change control back and forth between the two characters.
Right.
Like anytime within a level. And that's a cool mechanic that would not be introduced to Mario for
until the Wii.
Yeah, quite some time.
And it is so funny now to like just to see how that works. In the old Super Nintendo game, because you couldn't control both characters at the same time, but one would just sort of like trail the other. And you know, obviously Super Mario World has its version of two player, which is like basically Mario and Luigi trading off levels. For all intents and purposes, like you're kind of just on your own, right? Like,
right.
You're playing until like the other person is playing and then you're not. So yeah, like they cracked the, at least an early version of this, like, two-player kind of thing.
It is also interesting that that in the GameCube era, when Nintendo, internally developed a Donkey Kong game, famously, they dropped all of the... They did not include
right,
all
the
of
Kong
the...
family.
The Kong family, like, the things that were introduced in Country, except the tie. Oh, I guess... No. I guess Donkey Kong has had a tie from... Like, does Donkey Kong in Donkey Kong the arcade game wear a tie?
I don't think so. No,
okay.
he's just a monkey.
Okay, so they did include the tie from in Jungle Beat, but the Donkey Kong in Jungle Beat
and his general design too, right? Like if you look at his design in Donkey Kong 94, for example, which we talked about last week, he's a little bit like cartoonier, right? Looks a little bit more like what was on the arcade cabinet art for the original Donkey Kong. And it really isn't until Country that they like standardize like this is the design of this guy.
Oh, okay, yeah. But what they don't take for sure is his attitude, because in Jungle Beat he's like angry. Like he's kind of angry because the whole thing in Jungle Beat is like I'm going to be king of the jungle. And so you have to defeat a bunch of other, like, monkeys or Kongs or whatever they are.
They're Kongs.
Yeah.
Right. They're not monkeys. They're not apes. They're not gorillas. They're Kongs. Why would they do that? Why would they change his personality?
I think it was just because they had their own take on what the character is and wanted it to be separate.
And that is a very, like, classic, like, that is the attitude of the Donkey Kong in Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong 3. He's like an angry, mean monkey who should be pacified in some way. Rare is like, no, he's like kind of a chiller. He likes to hang out and like eat bananas, lives in the jungle.
Yeah.
What other like points of comparison for Super Mario World and Donkey Kong Country? They both sort of have a like continuous world, and you can like revisit old levels. So like in that way, they're more open than like Super Mario Brothers 3 was.
They both have like reptilian-esque big bad.
Sure, sure. Which that does really feel like Rare was just like, what are they doing over there with Mario? Okay, we got one of those two. He also has a crown. We don't know why.
Uh-huh.
I think it's interesting the way that both games keep track of your progress and like display it to you on the title screens. In Mario World, it shows you how many exits you've cleared. And so you're like just trying to get to that what, how many is it total? 91?
I'm not sure.
It's something. And in Donkey Kong Country, it keeps track of like the secrets that you discover and worlds you clear, and it gives you a percentage. Which is also another thing that you just like need to know the number, because the original Donkey Kong Country gets up to 101%. Do you ever do that? Do you ever get to 101%?
Yeah, I played a ton of Donkey Kong Whoa. Country. So, yes, definitely. Also, you have the introduction in both of these games of, like, animal buddies.
Yeah, animal Yoshi buddies
introduced
that you ride.
In
yeah.
Super Mario World, and then Rambi and friends in Donkey Kong Country.
You think the animal buddies are buddies with each other?
Is that I what do. You're saying? I do think so,
you
yeah.
You think that, like, Espresso hangs out with
I think
guard?
I think Rambi was, like, the first.
Yeah.
And then he was like, I've got this good thing going. I'm not even convincing myself.
No.
I don't know if Rambi really likes his life.
Rambi's like a dog. He's the best. He's like, he's happy.
Okay. So it's not his job. Rambi's job is not to be crated around from place to place.
Hmm.
Like, is Rambi, because is
he's,
Rambi...
He's not opting into those crates, if that's what you're asking.
I think
the Kremlings, like, you know, like, trap him and then like
okay.
construct the crate around him.
Yes.
And then
Donkey Kong is freeing him.
Yeah, that's
I
right.
like that. Yeah.
And then he's so grateful that he's like, yeah, I'll run into some bad guys for you. Okay. So that's yes. So animal buddies, Rambi to Yoshi, that totally makes sense to me as like a through line. The bosses, let's talk a little bit about like boss fights in Donkey Kong Country. Because they don't feel like the boss fights in Super Mario World, right? Like that they don't feel like the Koopa Kids, which are all like on the scale of you. And maybe that's it, right? That like all the Donkey Kong Country bosses are like big versions of regular enemies. And you have to like navigate around a giant version of these things.
Yeah. I also feel like for whatever reason, the boss, you take it for granted when you're playing it as a kid. But the boss fights in Donkey Kong Country are pretty wild, right? Like, they don't follow, like, any logic. It's not like in Super Mario World, you get to a castle, there's a Koopa Kid there, you defeat the Koopa Kid.
Yeah.
In Donkey Kong Country, it's not like you're playing through a, like, flamingo world or anything. It's just the end boss
right.
is... a giant flamingo.
No, it's like a buzzard or a condor or something. It's definitely not a flamingo.
They're not flamingos?
No, no way. No, because you
it
fight...
has such a long neck.
Yeah, it's like a vulture.
Oh, I all this time have
Mark,
just
no.
I just assumed it was a flamingo. Still think it might be a flamingo.
I
banana eating
it
flamingo.
It is not. But like that is like the sort of and you know the conceit of the Donkey Kong Country games are ridiculous, right? But it's very funny that as you're fighting all these bosses, it's just against a backdrop of piles of bananas.
Yeah.
And when you beat them, it drops one huge banana.
Uh-huh.
So, like, there's some ways where, like, and, you know, what a ridiculous thing to be discussing, but, like, the logic of these games. Like, which one is more Looney Tunes, you know?
Yeah, I think that...
Because Mario's pretty Looney Tunes, too.
Mario's pretty Looney Tunes, but it is... I think they both play by the rules of their own worlds.
Sure.
Right? Like
we just have precedent for what Mario's world is, right? Like it, everything in Super Mario World feels like it's an expanded version of what's in Super Mario Brothers 3. Donkey Kong Country is like, it's just like grabbing for stuff.
Well,
right?
I think that is kind of what I was trying to get at earlier, where it was like Mario feels like an evolution of itself because world.
Yes.
Maybe in some ways, I totally agree with you. It feels like an expansion of Super Mario Brothers 3. But in other ways, like when you're playing World for the first time, you're encountering things that are totally, there's like dragons and, you know, like bullet bills and like all those kind, like giant bullet bills, like all those kind of like new crazy things. But even though they're new and crazy, they feel a piece of Mario. Like they Nintendo is so good at threading the needle between like, is this Mario? Is this not Mario? The Donkey Kong Country games, by comparison, just feel so chaotic. And yet, you know, like, I do think that they follow their own internal logic. Their own internal logic, I guess I would say, is more Looney Tunes, is just more chaotic.
Yeah. Absolutely. Do you, I mean, this feels like a ridiculous question, but do you have a preference between these two games?
Man, I love both of these games. Excuse me. I love both of these games very deeply.
Yeah.
But for very different reasons. Like, I probably return to Super Mario World more often. I was going to say, I think I've probably put more time into Donkey Kong Country. I don't know if that's true. But no, I love them both equally. They're like, you know, two of my children. I couldn't pick. What about you?
I mean, this is one where I think a draw is a reasonable answer. For me, it's World. Super Mario World is like a borderline perfect game as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Donkey Kong Country, the original, is very, very good. And like you, it's maybe not fair to loop 2 and 3, Country 2 and Country 3, into the same conversation, but like it is just the same game again with like a different character and a different setting, right? And so like there's just so much that Donkey Kong Country as a franchise has to offer. But on balance, I still like World more.
And I think World objectively is the better game.
Yeah.
Like the platforming in Donkey Kong Country is not as tight, the physics of Donkey Kong jumping and everything just feel a little not as good as Super Mario World.
Not as good, but there's also something really satisfying about the coyote time in Donkey Kong Country is out of control. It's some of the loosest there is, especially as you're doing the cartwheel or the roll. You can be like, you know, 4 or 5 Donkey Kong body lengths off the platform and still push jump. Like, it's nuts. They'll just let you do it. And when you are able to, like, manage that and control that, it feels really good. And you can get going really fast doing that, too. You're right in that it doesn't feel quite as polished, but in its unpolished nature, is still like fun to maneuver in.
Donkey Kong Country can still surprise me too, because I was watching in the most recent, Awesome Games Done Quick last month, there was a Donkey Kong Country run, and I never knew that you could throw like one of the metal kegs,
and jump
on it, and like that there was an animation for.
Oh yeah,
no idea. I've put countless hours into this game. Absolutely no idea. One last thing, and then we can move off of Super Mario World and Donkey Kong Country. The other thing I think is interesting is between the two games, there was Sonic, and all the Sonic games, and Sonic's attitude, and Mario has always been very classic, you know. Mario's not interested in a chili dog, thank you very much. But Donkey Kong would be interested. You know what I mean? Like, yes. Donkey Kong felt very of the 90s. Donkey Kong Country
felt very
of the 90s.
Which I guess, like, to use the sort of, like, Looney Tunes analogy still, like, if Donkey Kong is Looney Tunes, Mario is Mickey Mouse, right? Like, sort of going with the, like, lowest impact not no personality, but like a personality that defaults to pleasant and seldom veers from that. Whereas Donkey Kong has attitude. And it's less present in the first game, right? Than like Donkey Kong Country 2 is where, you know, Dixie Kong is like shredding on a guitar, right? But I mean, even the opening of Donkey Kong Country is Cranky Kong, you know, like using an old Victrola record player, and then like Donkey Kong appears with a boombox and like messes up his old man's title screen.
Uh-huh.
And like you'd never see that in a Mario game, and you certainly don't see it in Super Mario World.
Yeah. I mean, you got Funky Kong in Donkey Kong Country.
And Candy Kong. So, like, it's big swings, right?
Yep.
And sometimes those swings pay off, and sometimes they strike out. So moving on now to the next sort of pillar here, which is 64 versus 64. The cleanest of the matchups, because they're both 64.
Uh-huh.
Super Mario 64 released on the Nintendo 64 in 1996 when the system was released, and Donkey Kong 64 released in 1999. Again, only a couple years later, but it feels like the system is in a totally different place when Donkey Kong 64 comes out.
Also crazy that Banjo-Kazooie was between this.
Yes. Yeah, Rare put out so many games on the Nintendo 64. By the standard of anyone putting out games on Nintendo 64, Rare put out so many. Two Banjo games, Jet Force Gemini, Donkey Kong.
Perfect Dark, GoldenEye,
Conker's Bad Fur
Diddy
Day.
Diddy Kong Racing.
Blast Corps.
So many. And so many games. In a system that was not around for that long.
No, from 96 to...
like 2001 was when the GameCube.
Yeah, 5 years.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy stuff. But okay. Well, let's. We had sort of circled around the idea already that Mario 64 is a thesis statement for the Nintendo 64. Kind of even more than that, it is the reason the controller is shaped that way and those buttons are on it, right? Like, Mario 64 is the reason the Nintendo 64 is the way it is.
Yeah, the Nintendo 64 was developed to play Mario 64.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else just kind of like fell out of that.
Right. It was for better or for worse.
Yep.
But Mario 64, you know, is revolutionizes this like 3D platformer and introduces so many like Mario concepts that are just sort of like the touchstones for Mario going forward. Some of the most iconic like things that get called back again and again in modern Nintendo games and modern Mario games get their start here. A giant eel that you're swimming around, like that starts here. Like Rainbow Road and the like a flying carpet around Rainbow Road, that's all like origins here. Being in a clock, like all this stuff is just Mario 64.
Yep. And then on the other side of it, you have Donkey Kong 64,
yeah,
which deviates wildly from what we had expected from the Donkey Kong Country games,
but is very much in line with, at least like structurally, what Mario 64 is, right?
How do you think so?
I just in that it's a 3D platformer.
Uh-huh.
And you go into like there's like a hub world, and each of those hub worlds takes you to like an individual world where you have to collect a certain number of things, right? Like, and then when you do that, you can progress. And it's got more like sort of adventure game kind of stuff to it, where you are like unlocking the individual Kongs and stuff like that. But it is mostly just like a bigger version of Mario 64.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess I don't necessarily disagree. But they feel, maybe just because like they play so differently to me, that I guess you're right. Like structurally, yeah, the very like basic bones of the games are similar, but in the details, they become right. such different experiences.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, like, a lot of that is the influence of Banjo-Kazooie, right? Which is, like, totally just Rare doing their own Mario 64, right? And I feel like that's what it is, that's the lens that Banjo-Kazooie is the lens through which Mario 64 passed to become Donkey Kong 64.
And I think that is true on an almost like literal level, because Donkey Kong 64 in its early development did start out as a like 2.5D platformer. More in the vein of what Donkey Kong Country was. And then after the success of Banjo-Kazooie, they switched to the Banjo-Kazooie engine, and it became this 3D platformer in the vein of Banjo-Kazooie.
Let's just like start comparing like some like facts, right? So Mario 64, a single playable character. They would be expanded to a roster of 4 playable characters in the DS version, which came out in 2004. But is that them taking a note from Donkey Kong? We don't know. But you just play as Mario. Through the course of that game, and he has the same move set. He doesn't learn new moves. There are 3 power-ups in the game, and that's it. Those are the only 3 things that like change the way you control Mario through the course of that game. Versus Donkey Kong 64, which has 5 different playable characters that you unlock like as you go, and you also unlock each of their weapons. I guess them playing musical instruments is more just like you make them do it and it's just a button press. But like there's so many different ways that it makes you control the player character.
Yeah, I feel like Super Mario 64 is a very focused experience that, you know, it wants to do. We're doing 3D platforming for the first time, and we want to do it well. And Donkey Kong 64 is like a maximalist experience.
Yes, 100%.
It is throwing everything, and doesn't even care if it sticks. It's just going for it. It's got characters. It's got colored bananas you wouldn't believe.
Yes,
you know, it just has so much going on.
Well, so much going on, and so much like backtracking through and like because every level has 100 bananas for each character to collect, and you can only collect them as those characters. So like, you know, there's that like kind of idea that there's a sort of like everlasting gobstopper in each level where like you just have to keep revisiting it. And like Mario 64 sort of had that, where it's like you have to go back into the level a handful of times. But like there are just so many different objectives in DK 64 that like you'll be in that one space forever, if you want to get everything
right. But I also feel like, in my experience with these games, I feel like Mario 64 has more. I just feel like I have more freedom. Whereas like in Donkey Kong 64, I feel like
it gates you a lot.
It gates you so much, and it's like, no, you have to be this specific character and do this specific thing in order to continue.
Yeah,
and I hate that.
Yeah, I hate it too, because it makes an open world feel not open, right? When you see a little like button on the wall that's in the shape of a peanut, so you're like, okay, I got to be Diddy Kong and I have to shoot his peanut guns at that. It's not really. You're not even like applying that character's abilities to like get into a space. You are literally just using his key, which is like peanut guns.
And the game prevents you from, like, it is not a mechanic in the game that you can just switch anytime you want.
Right.
So you have to take note of, okay, when I am Diddy Kong, I will come back and return to this.
Yeah, and I feel like we're ragging on Donkey Kong 64, but I feel like that's warranted. If I were to ask you, Mark, which of these games do you prefer?
It's definitely Mario 64, even though I bump up against that game playing it nowadays a lot, and I have not returned to Donkey Kong 64 for the longest time. I remember the first time I played Donkey Kong 64, I was so excited because I loved the Country game so much. I did not know anything about Donkey Kong 64 or what to expect, and I was so bewildered and disappointed. It wasn't until many years later that I went back and actually played the game. As a kid, I found it, I was so disappointed. because I loved the country game so much, and it was such a departure right. from what those were.
Yeah, and for me, the obvious answer is Mario 64, and I don't, like, I would be interested in playing DK 64 if it comes out on the Nintendo Switch Online, which, by the way, it should. It's weird that it's not, right? Like, they made such an event of the country games coming to the Super NES, NSO, that, like, why wouldn't they do that again?
But maybe they will, because those games came late, right? That's true. They didn't come yeah. immediately. Also, there's two arcade games in Donkey Kong 64, right?
There are two of them?
The original Donkey Kong, and there's Jetpack.
Oh.
And you have to play both of them to progress in the game, and I wonder if...
Well, you don't need to get all of the tokens or whatever they are to get through a level, but like...
But don't you have to... But you have to play you both.
No, you don't have to... You don't have to play both. You have to beat the game, those games, in order to get, like... It's like getting a star in Mario.
Okay.
Yeah, like, you can skip it if you want, but like... Yeah, it is funny that it's like, okay, this is the entirety of this old game. You have to, and the, you know, it's four screens in
right,
Donkey Kong.
Right.
I didn't know that Jetpack was in there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it's Jetpack.
Also crazy that, like, that's not something that that Super Mario 64 would do at all.
Right.
It's another case of like, and there are a bunch of these like sort of mini game sort of things in DK 64, just like there were in Country, whereas Mario 64 is like the closest thing it has to mini games are like the slide levels, right?
Yeah, that is a good point, though, that is something that they carry over from Country and try to do a lot with, is the different mini games
yeah.
that are in the game. I also think that the boss battles in Donkey Kong 64 are pretty cool. Like, some of them are
they're pretty involved.
Some of them are pretty neat.
Culminating in that the King K. Rool boss fight, which is like the thing of stuff of legends.
Yes, it's like a boxing match.
Yes,
with King K. Rool like in a boxing ring.
Right.
With Kremlins that are doing the like play by play and ringing the bell and everything. It's pretty cool.
And you have to switch between the five different Kongs and like use their special abilities in a way that's like genuinely compelling and like. It almost seems like the rest of the game is a justification for that final fight. And, like, yeah, it's a cool final fight. And, like, they earned it. But, yeah, that's definitely way more exciting and epic than Mario fighting Bowser basically the same way for the third time.
Yeah. I also think Donkey Kong 64 just follows more of that kind of... And maybe it's because it was developed by Rare, and so it has more of that... I don't know, like European humor sensibility or something. The game throws so much at the wall. There are like fairies that are like part of like the story. You know, it's all this stuff that.
Yeah, and you're getting like weapon blueprints and like giving them to Funky Kong, who's like, he makes weapons, which is an interesting character, a wrinkle for that character.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where the country games were weird. Donkey Kong 64 is just super bizarre.
Yes. I mean, you spend part of that game haunted by the ghost of Wrinkly Kong, who dies off camera between games with no explanation. Of course, we explained it in our Christmas song, Wrinkly got ran
over by a reindeer.
Please, Mark. Yeah, inspired by any sort of previously existing song or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, that's just another example of like, here's a piece of continuity or something.
Right.
But it's also weird.
It did give us Lanky Kong.
It did give us Lanky Kong.
So count our blessings where they exist.
Yes.
Before we move on, I did want to read part of a review that's in the Wikipedia for Donkey Kong 64 under reception. They have the game when it came out was fairly well received, but a lot of the stuff that we complained about the game today, like, they were calling out then. But there is one
Are you saying our 25-year-old takes aren't revolutionary?
IGN called it Donkey Kong 64 is a big game. Yes. Like, if you try to do everything, it'll take you forever. IGN called it Rare's War and Peace. Funny. But this is the most 1999 thing to me. The reviewer for...
Who is it? Is it Pear Schneider? Is it Jeff Dunham? Who did this review?
It's in Game Fan. Hold on, let me... Okay. I'm trying to find it because it just made me... Okay, yeah. So the reviewer for Game Fan...
So I said Jeff Dunham. I meant Jeremy Dunham. Jeff Dunham is the ventriloquist
the puppet
comedian.
Guy? Yeah, okay. Game Fan, on the other hand, was most disappointed, I'm reading from Wikipedia, by how it, quote, truly offers nothing new. Hold on to your butts.
Yeah.
And compared its monotony, Donkey Kong 64's monotony and repetition, with the 1999 film Eyes Wide Shut, saying, quote, a big bloated project with not enough brilliant moments to justify the numbness of sitting through the entire thing. It fails to live up to the Rare name.
That feels like a misread of every proper noun.
It just really tickled me that somebody compared Donkey Kong 64 to Eyes Wide Shut.
Right.
Because that's the kind of criticism that I live for.
Right.
I don't think it
holds... That's sort of the joke of our cold open.
I don't think it's a very... I think time has been kinder to Eyes Wide Shut than
Absolutely.
It has been to Donkey Kong 64.
Yes.
But that... Ooh, I love that. I love that that comparison was made when this game was out.
I guess the other sort of thing to touch on here is that Donkey Kong 64, a big game, huge in terms of like the memory size of it, but also just in terms of its technical strain on the system, it required the use of the, what was that thing called?
The expansion pack, right? Like
yeah.
Or the memory pack. What is that called?
Yeah. Well, yeah, this thing that gave the system more RAM to, you know, play more complicated games.
Yeah, the Nintendo 64 expansion pack.
In fact, it came with the thing. And very few games would take advantage of this, right? Like,
I think
this,
only
Majora's.
Two required it. Majora's and this, yeah. Like, required it.
Yeah. And then, like, Perfect Dark had, like, some levels that wouldn't be playable without it, and it would, like, add some textures and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was really just, like, the first parties that were taking advantage of it. I guess there are also a handful of, like, other games that retroactively got a little bit nicer.
So StarCraft, I just looked it up. StarCraft 64, it's needed to unlock levels from the Brood War add-on.
Sure.
Quake 2 features higher color depth and better performance. And then in the vast majority of games with support, such as Castlevania Legacy of Darkness and Indiana Jones and the Infernal Machine, the expansion pack is merely used as an additional frame buffer memory to enable various high resolution like basically to improve performance. A number of games supported it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Like, it looks like a lot of games took advantage of it, but few, only two required it.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, like Excite Bike 64, I know is one of them. Just that we're the versions of those games that are on the Nintendo 64 NSO are taking advantage of that same like virtual expansion pack. And you know, Mario 64 is obviously just running what the thing can do outside of the box, which makes it less technically impressive, but for the time felt more technically impressive because you'd never seen Mario running around a 3D space before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it was revolutionary when it came out. One thing we didn't touch on in the Super Nintendo games, and I wonder if maybe we should loop back around to, is music.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, obviously Super Mario World, has a great soundtrack and does a really cool thing with like basically just doing one theme over and over again and presenting it in different arrangements and different soundscapes and, actively changing them as you go, right? Like when you collect Yoshi, that's when like the little, drums start playing along with it. But Donkey Kong Country introduced a new like suite of tunes to like the Nintendo canon.
Yeah. And I it's another example of both games have stood the test of time in different ways.
Yes.
Right? Because the Super Mario World soundtrack is incredible. The Donkey Kong Country soundtrack has tapped into modern sensibilities. You know, like, I think a lot of people,
that's totally,
you know what
true,
I mean?
Yes.
Like, have a, not just like nostalgia for Donkey Kong Country, but some of the songs in the Donkey Kong Country franchise are, you know, some of the most like remixed online,
right,
and are used in so many playlists of like soothing, relaxing video game music. Like, it's such a, and this, what the, what they are going for is so different.
Yes.
Like Donkey Kong 60, the Donkey Kong games are so like moody, and the, you know, like,
yes,
or like some of the tracks are like surprisingly like moody.
Right. Well, I mean, like, we are dancing around aquatic ambience here, right? Which is like really just sort of like a Brian Eno-esque soundscape inside this 16-bit video game that you're playing. Like, it genuinely, like, there's a thing in, especially around this time, of like Japanese video game music, and most video game music at that time was, if not being made in Japan, it was composers elsewhere sort of like aping the style, right? Like, you don't really know at this point in the video game lifespan what music in a video game can be, right? So they were all this sort of like melody and counter melody based you know, kind of thing that would just like propel you to the next part of the game. And of course there are exceptions in like the Final Fantasy games and, you know, whatever, but like getting to the Donkey Kong Country games is where like it truly can, the track is called aquatic ambience because like it's just ambient sounds, and like there's that, and there's like Bramble Blast, and like there are so many of these pieces of music that are just like, they're iconic, but they are not leaning necessarily on like something so trite as melody, right? Like, it is genuinely the texture of what they're delivering that is like the compelling or unique part about it.
And I would say Donkey Kong 64 steps back from that a little bit.
100%,
it's,
yeah,
it's much more in the vein of like a Banjo-Kazooie or like a Mario 64.
But Mario 64 introduces a bunch of themes that like become Mario standard, that like the castle theme is like, it all feels so, I feel like the music in Mario 64 is more influential than the music in Donkey Kong 64, whereas I would say the music in Donkey Kong Country may be more influential than the music in Super Mario World.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I do think that's a really good point. I guess what I was trying to say is that I think Donkey Kong 64 is more of a return to the classic, quote-unquote,
oh, yeah, interesting,
form of,
yeah,
video game music versus the more moody pieces in,
yeah,
Donkey Kong Country.
It's interesting. I wonder why that is. All right. Any other thoughts about Mario 64 versus Donkey Kong 64?
No. Should we move on to Super Mario Brothers Wonder versus Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze?
Yeah, let's do that. It's maybe a weirder point of comparison because these games are separated by 9 years.
A hardware generation.
A hardware generation. But, you know, like Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze does come out again on Switch in 2018. So it's only separated by 5 years then to Super Mario Brothers Wonder. But like, what's so interesting is like, I think this is where, and it's because it comes out first, but where Donkey Kong Country starts to, or like the Donkey Kong franchise starts to do things that we will then see replicated in Mario. Like, I don't think that there are too many times when you're playing a Mario game and you're like, ah, they got that from Donkey Kong, right? But when you're playing Super Mario Brothers Wonder and you get to a level that is like has a beautifully colored background, but everything in the foreground is in silhouette, you're like, that's a Donkey Kong Country move. You stole that from Donkey Kong Country Returns / Tropical Freeze. So it's like one of the times, and like we talked about it a lot when Wonder came out, that it is so focused on like the personalities of the characters, just like through, you know, their animations. When they go down tubes, they kind of like scrunch themselves into it. That's taken from Donkey Kong.
I would push back that it was taken from Donkey Kong.
It is like the way Donkey Kong does it, though.
Yeah, that is definitely true. It's the most like personality.
But the silhouette thing.
The silhouette thing is very, I mean, that is one of the most striking visual moments from the Donkey Kong Country, from Donkey Kong Country Returns, and then they do it again in Tropical Freeze. One thing that is very interesting to me about these two games is Wonder is kind of a reinvention of 2D Mario, but like we've talked about before, still feels it's all part of Mario. It's an evolution, but you're like, this makes sense. I track this. Whereas Tropical Freeze feels like a dead end. People were angry when Tropical Freeze was announced.
Yes.
Because it was, so at this point, of course, Rare is out of the picture, but Donkey Kong Country, when Donkey Kong Country Returns was announced for the Wii, it was in the hands of Retro, the Texas-based studio that is Nintendo first party that previously was known for the Metroid Prime series. And so people loved Returns, but people were angry when Retro was working on Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze.
Yeah.
And I think Tropical Freeze is an amazing game, one of the best platformers of all time.
Right, and its reputation grows with like every year, right? Like when it originally came out on Wii U, people were like, "Yeah, this is pretty good." And it took like the sort of reintroduction on Switch for all those Wii U freaks to be like, "No, hold on, this game is actually amazing. We should be singing its praises and be excited about it coming to Switch."
I also think it's weird, or an interesting point in comparison anyways, between Mario and Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, is that Tropical Freeze is so hard. It is purposefully very difficult. And in the Switch version, they did a lot of changes and updates to make it more like accessible.
Funky mode.
To all audiences. And that's so the antithesis of what Mario tries to be. Like,
right.
You know, like Mario is a platformer that is for everybody and you can find the challenge for yourself. And by the end, you know, if you want to play some of the incredibly challenging levels, they exist, but you are not forced to do them. Tropical Freeze is like, no, you probably just can't advance in this game. Like, yeah, this game is just too hard and there's no way for you to advance.
Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze is especially, but is sort of like a cornerstone of the series, is that there are four playable characters and they all control a little bit differently, right? They each have like different, and is it really just in like their jumps and what they're like? I guess there's a couple different things about the way those characters like hold barrels or whatever.
Sorry, in Tropical Freeze.
In Tropical Freeze.
Yeah, they all have different abilities.
Right. And I guess there's five of them because Funky is also an option. Versus Wonder, where Mario, Luigi, Peach, Daisy, Toad, Toadette, another Toad, all play identically, right?
Yeah.
And like there's a little bit different with the Yoshis and Nabbit, but those are like sort of admittedly the sort of like easier characters, which feels like, again, something they're sort of borrowing from Funky Mode.
Yeah, you do wonder how much they were because I guess in Super Mario Brothers 2, we introduced the idea of the different Mario characters having different abilities.
Yes.
And that has basically persisted until we got to Wonder, when everybody plays basically the same.
I mean, sort of. In the new games, they all play the same as well.
And then that's true. And then in Country, in the Country series, they started introducing new Donkey Kong characters, new Kongs, and they had different abilities as well, right? And some of that, in some ways, I've never done the mapping before, but I think of, like, you know, at least in Tropical Freeze, like, Dixie has a little bit more of a jump, you know.
A little bit more of a float.
More of a float, in the way that the Princess Peach has like a little bit more of a float. And then,
but Diddy also has kind of a float too. They're like two separate floats.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that like they can't be neatly mapped, right?
Right.
Because like the cane ability that Cranky Kong has, there's no like parallel for that in Mario.
No, there isn't DuckTales though.
Well, yes.
But I
Shovel Knight.
I guess what is interesting to me is that you do have these two franchises that have different characters that play so differently, and then eventually, you know, like Mario has come back around to being like, no, everybody essentially plays the same.
Yeah. What's interesting is like that's been a foundational part of the Country games from the beginning. Like even when you're playing single player and you've got Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong, what you can do depends on which of those characters you're controlling, right? Like, it's just interesting to think that like that's always been part of that series.
Yeah.
even when you're playing it single player. All right. What else about Wonder and Tropical Freeze?
Well, at least in the you and I together played the Wii U version, but I most recently played Tropical Freeze like in 2018 when it came out. So my memory is not exact, but one thing that's kind of similar between the two is Super Mario Brothers Wonder introduced badges and in that you can equip that give you different like abilities or power-ups, like you get a super mushroom immediately when you enter a level if you equip like that badge.
Yeah.
And then in Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, in
you can buy
items and like shields to protect your hearts or like additional hearts, like that sort of thing, that give you when you go into levels, just like I guess you can equip different badges, quote unquote.
This is also both of these games have finding secret exits to levels that will give you access to more levels, right? Like that is something that both these games have in common. These games also both have in common the that there can be like multiple planes of platforming that you can go into the background or like way into the foreground. That's sort of like platformer standard by this point, but it is interesting that both of them do it.
I also think another interesting point of comparison is that Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, so many of the levels are like theme park rides and the music changes and like accompanies the action. And that's something that they really leaned into with Super Mario Brothers Wonder in some levels in a way that they never have before.
Yeah, well, I mean, like all of the like Wonder Seed transformations feel like, or Wonder Flower transformations, I guess, they feel like those theme park rides, right? Of Tropical Freeze. So that's another kind of place where it seems like maybe they were taking notes from Donkey Kong. What else about these two games?
They are very, this is the one where it feels the hardest just because they feel so different. Like they do feel like a natural, hey, you started with the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
And these two are like, they're very different, like we talked about, but also they are platformers.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And then over the course of the next 20 years, they have ended up in very different places, whereas Wonder is kind of a reinvention of the series, a fresh coat of paint, a potentially laying the groundwork for the next generation of Mario 2D platformers, and Tropical Freeze is a dead end, you know, it
so far. Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is like you know, we're talking about the sort of like Looney Tunes-ness of like which, and when we started, Donkey Kong was crazier than Mario's surreal and like has magical realism in it, whatever, but it's like pretty chill by comparison, right? Whereas maybe that is still the dynamic between them in these most recent games, but there's something, God help me, I'm gonna say grounded about Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, in that like each of the levels present themselves as real spaces that exist for a purpose. Super Mario Brothers Wonder, the levels are levels, right? Like you go into the desert and like there are floating blocks and you're just like, you know, whatever, who cares? I'm having fun. Whereas in Donkey Kong, you go into a level and it's like a juice factory and the whole world is built around like the fruit industry. So there are like big blades swinging around, but those blades are chopping up pieces of fruit to be like used in the juice factory. And there's just like an effort made to justify all of the spaces that you're in Tropical Freeze in a way that Mario almost never does.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a good point. And I feel like it really like, it's almost, in last week's episode, we talked about how Mario is consistent and it is surprising and it does new and different things, but it is like reliable.
Yeah.
And Donkey Kong, they've never really figured out what to do with that character. It has had moments,
right,
you know, where it has been very successful. You had Country. And then, you know, on the 64, it struggled. And then on the GameCube, Jungle Beat and, like, these weird games that, like nobody really felt very like it didn't feel like anybody was happy with.
And I mean, I was very happy with Donkey Konga. Donkey Konga is one of the great games. If we had a rhythm game from Mario to compare, then it would blow him out of the water. And we're not counting the Dance Dance Revolution one.
But then in the Wii era, you know, they go back to Country and people are excited. But then, like, Tropical Freeze comes out just a few years later and,
yeah,
you know, people are upset. And then Donkey Konga is once again, you know, spending 40 years wandering the desert until, right, it, you know, it figures out its place again. Whereas Mario has never had that problem.
Right, right. Mario, they always come out with a new Mario game. Whereas Tropical Freeze came out on Wii U in 2014. It's been a decade since we've had a new Donkey Kong game. And, like, we could get one this year, but, like, I don't know. I'm not, like, it's not on my, like, yes, that's one of those things that's going to happen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You do wonder what the future of Donkey Kong is, because it feels unlikely that we will never see another Donkey Kong game again. But what does it mean to be a Donkey Kong game?
Truly, right? When, like, we saw what it meant to be a Donkey Kong game under Rare, just as we saw what it meant for there to be a Donkey Kong game under Retro. And now Retro has spent, you know, however long they've been working on Metroid Prime 4, working on Metroid Prime 4 and not working on Donkey Kong. That's also something that we need to, like, just put a flag in, right? Retro hasn't put out a game in 10 years.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, I think they've assisted.
They must. They must have run support on some stuff.
But like, yes. Yeah. Well, it just makes you wonder what canceled projects, you know, were in the works at one point or another.
Right. Or if they finished a Donkey Kong game and it
will never see the light of day.
We'll either never see the light of day, or Nintendo will just put it out because they're like, the year's looking a little thin. Print it.
Maybe it'll be one of those things like Star Fox 2, where, you know, yes, some distant year in the future when you and I are recording this from a retirement home, where we share a bedroom, we will, Nintendo will put out
we'll get our
Switch Classic Edition and Donkey Kong 3.
Yeah, the novelty there will be that it's a thing that you have to hold in your hands. That won't be what video games are like in the future. Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. What Donkey Kong is and even who makes it is just all question marks, right? One of the crazy things about Super Mario Brothers Wonder is that there's a huge percentage of, or not a huge percentage, but like a lot of the key creatives had been working on the Mario series since the beginning. There's no such since the beginning with the Donkey Kong series.
Yep.
It doesn't exist.
Yep.
So yeah, it's and you can't really like hold the Donkey Kong series up in the same way that you do the Mario series, right? Like, Mario competes with very few other series in that regard. But it is funny that they have this series of games called Mario versus Donkey Kong that invite the comparison. All right, Mark, anything else about Super Mario Brothers Wonder versus... Oh, music. We touched on it in the other generations. Any quick takeaways from the music in Tropical Freeze versus Wonder?
Yeah, I feel like their goals are so different. Just like we've seen with the other... Well, just like we saw in the Super Nintendo generation, I feel like their goals are so different.
I actually think in a lot of ways the music in Super Mario Brothers Wonder is some of the least remarkable Mario music. And that's not true of Tropical Freeze. Tropical Freeze still has like a banger soundtrack and does a lot of like diegetic stuff with the... although I guess Wonder does as well.
Yeah, no, but I know what you mean, and I think that like Wonder does so much with its soundscape, but you're right that the music, like, what is the ground theme for Super Mario Brothers Wonder? Actually, I do have it burned into my head because of trying to beat that final level over and over. It's definitely
Wonder also has that jump piece of music that dun dun dun.
I mean, there's a lot of really good music in Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
But Tropical Freeze is like an audio delight from start to finish. And like you pointed out, it like escalates in intensity as you progress through the level, which is a really cool magic trick that like Wonder doesn't even approach. All right. Maybe we are done talking about these two franchises. Oh, you have to pick one. Wonder or Tropical Freeze?
Oh, I mean, I think Wonder. I think Wonder. It's probably Mario all the way down.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, but Donkey Kong Country and Tropical Freeze can definitely hold their own.
I may need more time with Wonder, like a replay of Wonder, because right now my gut is the Tropical Freeze.
Oh, interesting.
I loved Wonder. I really enjoyed my time with it. But like Tropical Freeze is a bigger game, right? It has more content and it has more challenge in it. So I think I may like that game better. I don't know though. For Wonder, too soon to call. And Tropical Freeze, we've had access to it for 10 years. All right, Mark, let's close this out. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Thank you so much to our 16-bit patrons, Connor McKay, Patrice Millette, David Henley, Alias X, and Kyle Seaborn. We appreciate you, and we appreciate everyone who is on the Patreon there, or who is listening to the show, or who is in the Discord. We appreciate all of you. Anthony DeLuca made our logo. Our theme music is provided by 8BitBetty. You can get more of his music by going to 8BitBetty.com or by listening right now. From my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Ehlers, saying thank you for listening. And oh, bananas.